Coming up, Subby, with Dan Zhang. Today, we're going to interview the publisher and creator of a magazine that's been very successful in its target market, which is aiming at young gay boys. The opinion is not necessarily those of the Regents of the University of California, nor the management of KUCI. This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. And coming up, Subversity with Dan Zhang. And with us on the show today, is Peter Ian Cummings, who's the publisher of XY Magazine. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi. why did you start this magazine? How many years ago now?
Well, it started in 1996, and so I guess that's about 7 years.
Yeah.
Now all your audience is going to be out there thinking about how I can't subtract, but yeah, 1996. You asked why I started the magazine.
Yeah.
I think, well, it's a national magazine for gay youth, and I guess I started the magazine because I was angry more than anything else. I had lived in England for about 10 years, and when I came back, I was just really surprised about what life was like for young gay men in the country. And I seem to be the only one who ever says anything about it, so it just seemed like a natural thing to do to start the magazine.
Yeah. How did England influence you?
Well, I think how did England influence me? I mean, I had been, like I said, I spent my 20s in England, which is a country where I think it's a much better country for young gay people than this country is.
Was that during the Thatcher years, though? No.
It was during the Thatcher years, but you know, a lot of people think that these matters are things that relate to the government, and I don't think I'm that concerned about how the government influences gay people. I mean, obviously, I feel that the government influences gay people. I should be better laws. Like, I think there should be less legally sanctioned discrimination, etc. But that's not really what XY is about. I think there are a lot of people out there, like the Human Rights Campaign and other people, who are trying to advance gay people politically. I was more interested in looking at how gay life is, how we treat each other, and how we form relationships, and how we decide whether to have sex or not, and how we go about living our lives. I think XY has been much more about how the gay community is from inside. I was used to living in a place where, in England, where people formed relationships really easily, where they got together sexually really easily, and where there wasn't anywhere near as neurotic a gay community as there is here. So I think when I came back, I was really surprised to find everybody sort of, that everyone was single, that people had a really hard time forming relationships, that everyone ran around calling everybody else a slut, that everyone was obsessed with being straight acting and wearing clothes from Abercrombie and Fitch and all these things. And I just found it really frustrating to be a part of the gay community because it was so screwed up. It
Yeah.
just made me angrier and angrier to the point where I had to start the magazine.
I mean, I guess the people who are in the mainstream gay community, I call them mainstream because they have been mainstreamed, they don't like your magazine, I guess.
Well, I think the magazine's controversial. I would say, you know, when you start talking about the mainstream assumes that there's some kind of majority of people out there who are the majority and they're one way, and we're some other weird little way. In fact, I think XY represents the majority of gay people. A lot of this, you know, so-called mainstream
Right.
behavior, I would say, is minority behavior in the sense that the majority of the people aren't that way. Those are the people that I sometimes like to refer to as the Stepford gays. And there was that move, the Stepford wives. I feel as if there's, or it's like the invasion of the body snatchers or something like that. There was this theory, which I think has been advanced by Out Magazine and some of the more sort of traditional gay political organizations in the country. And this theory said that for gay people to succeed, what was necessary was for us to be just like straight people, and we were going to shop for refrigerators together and have joint mortgages, and gays in the military and gay marriage. And Andrew Sullivan once said that as soon as we got gays in the military and gay marriage, we could disband the gay movement because our job would have been done. And I just don't feel that way. I think that the important thing about being gay is to be able to love and to be able to have sex. And And, you know, that's really what it's about. It's not about all this other, you know, I don't want the gay community to just be kind of a plugged-in kind of pawn of for the purpose of making money for upscale products, which I guess seems to be what these kind of respectable gays are looking for. I think they said, okay, we're going to act respectable, which means we're not going to have sex too much. We're not going to be, we're not going to have fun. You know, we're gonna act just like straight people and be straight acting and wear our Abercrombie hat, and then you have to accept us, and that's what it means to be gay. That's insane to me. And I think when Europeans look at us, they just think that we're ridiculous when we're standing around with our hands down, stiff at our sides, acting all straight acting. I mean, what was the point of that?
The idea of the movement.
Well, exactly, because we gave up our right to have sex in exchange for acceptability. Everybody said to us, sure, you can be gay, provided that you're, you know, dry-cleaned gay and you never have sex and you act like a stockbroker and you're all respectable, and then we'll let you be gay. I want it that way, you know. I want to have sex.
You know, the underground press and the alternative press used to have this edge to it, and you know, now you look at The Advocate and Out magazine, and they're the same thing, and they don't actually criticize anything.
Well, that's because they get all their money from upscale products, as do all the national gay lobbies. I mean, you know, when you have the Gap and Citibank, and I mean, not that I'm complaining about the Gap and Citibank, that's not my point. But the source of funding for the gay media has become multinational corporations. For example, Out and The Advocate, who are the two largest gay magazines, get the majority of their funding from advertising from multinational corporations. And
they're owned by this company now, right?
They're the same company.
Yeah.
Out and The Advocate?
Yeah.
They're the same company, yeah.
Yeah.
But we're the only gay magazine that gets the majority of our income from newsstand sales, so we're able to say the things that that the readers want to hear and that the readers need to know about.
You've had a beef about the advertisers like Calvin Klein, and they wouldn't, and even though they sell to the gay market, but they want to advertise in a magazine.
Well, you see, the thing about XY is that we've taken some political positions on things that some people don't like. For example, I've said that we've said that the age of consent is too high at 18, which this is a very uncomfortable subject, and as soon as you start talking about it, everyone will attack you. But the fact remains that the average age that Americans have sex is 15. Are we going to say that the majority of Americans are felons and should be thrown in jail? I've said that honestly. That, you know, that we have this huge number of who are 18 and 19 who've had sex with people who were 17, and they're all in jail, you know, for 10 or 15 years. I said it was wrong, and those laws are enforced unfairly against gay people because the parents of a straight person are very unlikely to take such a prosecution against the lover of their kid, but the parents of a gay person are very likely to take such an action against their kid. And I wrote an article saying that, and you know, this is why we don't have advertising. But those are the subjects that are important for gay people to talk about. It's not important for gay people to talk about, you know, what straight celebrity thinks gay people are cool. That's not the function of the gay press. That's a way for the multimedia conglomerates to make money. But it's not the political function of the gay press, which is to talk about social and sexual freedom.
Do you think it's a hypocrisy among these executives who, you know, like to look at your magazine, but then they, in the same breath, they will condemn it for being showing kind of half-naked boys?
Well, I don't know if they like to look at the magazine. People have criticized us for showing half-naked boys, but I don't think XY magazine is that way.
Okay.
what people don't like is the fact that we'll show gay 16-year-olds, and we say, okay, here's a gay 16-year-old. Here are two gay 16-year-olds who are in love. You know, I was out having lunch with the senior editor of The Nation magazine, and she said to me that she had read XY and she thought it was just a very romantic magazine. You know, we have a hard time thinking of teenagers as being romantic. If you have a 16-year-old girl and boy, and you put them in Teen Beat or Teen People, everyone will say, oh, that's so cute. But if you have two 16-year-old boys, and they're in there kissing, it's somehow supposed to be sleazy and pornographic, but that's just bias.
Right, right.
It's just bias. And, you know, these other magazines are much more sleazy than we are. You take a look at Maxim, which is a magazine which is full of what I would call truly sleazy pictures of naked women who on average are 20 or 30 years younger than the men who read the magazine. And I all of these companies are in there. Their problem here has to do with the fact that we represent gay teenagers as they are, and people don't want gay teenagers represented as they are.
You
but
just
they
show,
are. They exist. What?
Do you just show, like, perfect bodies in it? You know, models?
Well, people have made these accusations about us also, but I think that's really strange because we have a wide variety of races and types of people in the magazine, much more so than any other gay magazine, and I think much more so than any other teen magazine. Most of the accusations, it's really funny because most of these accusations come from people who've never seen the magazine.
Also,
I think what I'm trying to say is that people don't want to think of gay teenagers as existing and being in love and being sexual, but they are that way. And I'm not trying to say that they should be that way. I'm just saying they are that way, and we're an accurate representation of that culture.
Right. And also,
some of the criticisms come from the actual readers of the magazine. You go out there and try and find, you know, a 17 or 18-year-old, and ask them what they think of XY magazine, and they all think it's great. And it made them feel good about themselves and made them feel happy about being alive, which is the purpose of the magazine. And you know what? I'm not really concerned with what other people think about the magazine. I'm only concerned with what the target market thinks about the magazine, and they like it.
And also, you allow readers to submit pictures of themselves and their boyfriends, for instance.
I mean, the magazine is largely written by readers.
Right.
It's a really great magazine, and I mean, everybody who knows anything about it says it's a really great magazine. And when people complain about it, they're making a political complaint. You know, they say it's badly designed. They say it's even though it's won awards, they say it's badly written, even won awards. What they're really saying is, we don't want gay teenagers to be sexual, and we don't want gay teenagers to be gay effectively. And the reason is because the adult gay community gets its respect from saying, we're not going to, we're not going to attack your kids in the street and eat them like cannibals, you know? That's what people are thinking. The adult gay community wants to say, we're going to totally ignore people who are under 18 and pretend they don't exist. And in exchange for that, you're going to let
Is that because they forget that they were gay when they were youths, or what?
That's right. They forget where they came from. And I just think that's treacherous. I mean, I have, we have gay people who are running all these enormous corporations like that won't place with us, like Abercrombie and Fitch and Calvin Klein, where their entire media structure is run by gay people, and they won't place in XY, even though they target their products at youth and to a large extent gay youth. Run by gay people. I just think that's hypocrisy.
In one of your editorials, you write about an executive from Calvin Klein saying, accusing you of publishing porn, I guess.
Well, it was an interesting thing because I was at Curfew in New York, which is this club for gay teenagers, right? And we were all there because we had a special XY event, and we were all signing magazines. So there were like hundreds of people there, and they were all like buying magazines and getting them signed. And then this guy came up. And this guy was Joe Janis, who's the director of marketing for Calvin Klein. And he came up and he, you know, kind of flipped through the magazine and he said, you know, I'd love to place in this magazine, but, you know, but you've got all this stuff in here. And he kind of opened to a cartoon which had a guy, you know, with just some baggy jeans that were sort of a little bit down. And, if you only didn't have this crap in here, but, you know, that crap is our lives. And he was in an underage gay club himself. I mean, it was our magazine and the movement of the people who read our magazine and the increasing number of young gay men who came out that made his life in New York City possible. And that's what all these people are like. They use the, I would say, social and political advances of the young gay male community to their advantage personally, and then they screw them professionally.
You know,
and in other ways, which, but you know.
I'm going to. But, you know, I think it's so empowering for young people or even older people to see this, because it seems like I just remember growing up, I grew up in Hong Kong, and I actually had boyfriends when I was a teenager, but you didn't see images of gay Asians, for instance, kissing each other or something. And that's something you could find, you know, in your magazine, young people romantic, like you
well,
said.
Well, but that's real. I mean, people, you know, teenagers do go out with each other, and they do have relationships. It's just real. I mean, we're not, it's not like we're showing people doing that word that I am not allowed to say in your program. See, I know that there are going to be people out there who are saying, oh, God, you know, you're encouraging young people to have sex. It's wrong for young people to have sex. But, you know, this is a basic argument, because it's really not wrong. And if it was wrong, the majority of Americans wouldn't do it. And I don't believe the majority of Americans are wrong. You know, clearly, the age of consent in Canada, the age of consent,
16,
in most cases, is 14, and in
14
France,
16,
it's 15.
Yeah.
In the UK, it's 16.
Yeah.
There are a lot of American states where it's 15 or 16, but the majority of them are 18. And I just think that that's bad law. And I think that we have no business telling everyone that their lives are wrong.
How come it is? How come?
I said that literally, everyone, because the majority of the people do it. See, I think that sex, people do it because they like each other, and there's a valid reason for doing that. And we're the only country that makes a judgment about that. You know, like, you could go the length and breadth of the United Kingdom, or the length and breadth of France, or probably length and breadth of Canada, and not find anyone who would go around saying that everybody, that all gay teenagers are wrong because they have sex. You just couldn't find anyone to say that. And I just think when people in this country say that, it's a political statement. It's not a moral statement. You know, they're saying just be just like us, and we'll let you exist. But if you're not just like us, then we're going to condemn you.
How come the gay lobby in England was able to lower, to argue like outrage in England is trying to lower it to 14 even, and yet the gay lobby here just doesn't want to touch it?
Because the gay movement here doesn't know what it's for. The gay movement is supposed to be about our rights to our social and sexual relations. That's what it's for. It's not for economic advancement. You know, I just don't see that. And when you get the other two things, you get the economic advancement. Like, you know, when parents think about whether their 17-year-old or 16-year-old son is having a boyfriend, their problem with it isn't that the person is having sex. The problem is that the person is gay, but they can't do anything about that. But they can stop them having sex. But you see, if people from, you know, there's no separation. If you try and insert someone else's power into that love to control it, it destroys it.
It's not as simple as
what they say.
Most of the leaders of your magazine who are young don't even know there's an age of consent law.
Well, I guess they don't, but I mean, we have large numbers of readers who have been in jail. I mean, you know, California has allocated millions and millions of dollars extra a year for enforcing the 18 age of consent law, and by definition, a large percentage of those prosecutions will be against gay people, because nobody knows about the law, but when the parent of a 16-year-old or 17-year-old finds out that they are having a relationship, they just usually say, oh, great. Or they may have a fight about it or whatever, but it's not going to lead to jail. The person who has to bring the prosecution is the parent, so a lot of the time, the way that a parent finds out that their kid is gay is because they discover that the kid's having a relationship, and the parent will bring a prosecution, a statutory rape prosecution against their son's lover. And California's law is particularly strict. The California statutory rape law says penetration, however slight,
mm-hmm.
and that's the definition of sex in California. So presumably, you can be prosecuted for anything. And if you're in one of the more conservative counties in the state, presumably you can kiss someone who's 17 and you go to jail and have to register as a sexual offender for the rest of your life. And this is unpleasant subject matter, but the fact is that these are selective prosecutions and they're enforced selectively against gay people, and that to me is bias. And the discussion of that is one of the primary purposes of the gay movement, and it's far more important than having the talks about what Cruz's 35-year-old gay upscale couples can go on, which I'm happy to go on those cruises. I'm happy that we have cruises, but it's not the function of the gay movement.
I don't want to go on those cruises.
Well, this is a separate point. You know, I just think that the whole of the gay press and the gay movement have lost their way and forgotten what they're for. And I accept that they're going to say, well, if we do talk about the subject of this just repressive system against gay teenagers, that we're going to lose our advertising money. But if they lost that advertising money, maybe they'd get some more from readers, and maybe that's why we have the highest newsstand sale of any gay magazine in the country.
Are you penetrating a lot of bookstores?
Well, we're carried by Barnes & Noble, Borders, Tower, and Virgin, and B. Dalton, and Walden Books. We're carried by all the major chains.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we have the highest sale of any gay magazine in all the major chains, and we're mandated by several of them for every store, which we're the only gay magazine that are.
They don't want you to tone. They never ask you to tone down the cover or anything.
They've never asked us to tone down the to change it. I don't think our covers are very shocking. I mean, it's politically shocking to go in a store and see two boys kissing on the cover, where if you had got a copy of Teen People and saw a boy and a girl kissing, no one would ever say boo about it.
Mm.
But I think I have to respect the bookstore chains, and like Amazon.com that carries our survival guidebook, because they believe in free speech. You know, like the bookstores almost do more for the gay movement than the gay movement. Because they believe in freedom of speech, you know. When was the last time you heard of a bookstore censoring a book? I mean, they exist for the purpose of spreading knowledge. The gay movement seems to exist now for the purpose of doing something else. I would just say that the gay establishment is so scared of disapproval by the straight establishment that they've turned themselves into an extension of the straight establishment. And I don't just think that's what the gay movement is for. And I don't think that's advancement. I don't think anybody thinks that that's advancement. And I don't think the majority of gay people think that that's advancement. You know, I think the majority of gay Americans stand around and think, everything's too restrictive around here, and there's nobody who's doing anything about it. And they don't respect the gay press, and they don't respect the gay movement. And you go out and ask the average gay person out there, and they'll tell you the same thing. Because the gay movement and the gay press don't do anything to advance to advance the really important rights that we need.
And there's one exception. You know, the Guide in Boston does, you know, take on these issues and, you know, criticize, you know, the fact that a lot of gays are put in jail.
That's a very interesting magazine, but I would just say it's not as big as us, and by and large, we're the only really large national magazine that does this. People have said to me, aren't you concerned about competition? And I'm not. I wish that all the other gay press would go around talking about, all of these issues. I wish someone in the country would go. I mean, it's part of the whole thing where the whole American political system has gone downhill, because none of them is discussing anything that's important to anyone. Like, they'll say what's important to people, and what is important to people, right? Medical care and you know, all these matters that are important to people, but we don't discuss anything important in our political system, and this is just another part of it. I'm not surprised.
It's shocking also that they're really silent on this impending war. You know, the gay press doesn't really deal with, you know, kind of political issues that are kind of overarching like that.
Well, this is a very complicated issue. The whole issue of the gay movement is a very complicated issue. And when you really start thinking about it, it becomes very, very complicated. And most people out there will probably think, oh, God, that's too complicated, so I'm going to go and eat a donut. Because, like, the principle that the leaders in the gay movement will tell you now is that gay people have got to just act nice, and when we prove to them that we're such great people, they're going to give us our rights, just because they realized how great we are. And that really isn't going to happen, because one of the things that I've realized gradually over the last 8 years since I moved back here from England was that all these things are related from the top to the bottom. The politics of the country are related from the top to the bottom. The reason why wagers have relationships is that there's a social function to stop them from having relationships, and the reason for that social function is because if we as a culture allow all these other types of people to be legitimized, some of the power that's held by the establishment of the country as it is will have to be given away. Right now, there was an interesting story in Newsweek when the Senate changed from Republican to Democratic control last year, where they had pictures of the heads of all the committees in the old Senate and the new Senate. And every single one of them, and I know because I looked at this, every single one of them was a white, monogamous, married male in their 50s or 60s. Just every one. There was no one else, and they all looked exactly the same. Mm-hmm. If we're going to say that, if we're going to legitimize gay people and their sexuality, then, you know, the maintenance of the political and economic power of this particular group of people depends on us not legitimizing any other people, and it trickles down to the fact that gay people don't have rights. This is all part of the same thing, and you're not just going to get gay marriage by saying, "Oh, be nice to us and give us gay marriage."
Well, so I wanted that.
To allow gay marriage means that the people in power now can no longer shame the other people into staying out of their way.
It's ironic that at the same time they're like writing, you know, essays, obituary about Harry Hale, for instance, and yet he didn't act like them, you know. He marched in the streets supporting Rambler, for instance. He was a member of the Communist Party. He was an early gay advocate and, you know, the first probably gay liberationist. And yet now they're taking him as this icon, whereas they don't even follow what he does.
Yeah, but you know, the political difference is no longer, the political differences that I think used to be valid in the U.S. are no longer valid. There is no particular difference between the Democrats and Republicans, for example.
Right, right.
Which there certainly used to be, and even 10 or 15 years ago. So I don't think that there's that old phrase that America means being able to paint your mailbox pink. Probably in England there's a regulation that you're not allowed to paint your mailbox pink, but everyone will. And here there's been a real movement to conformity over the past 15 years. And I think. You know, people can accept gay people, but only as a concept, not as the people who are out there having gay sex. And they've tried to just make gay people just like them. It's part of the whole conformity of the country, and it's a really serious issue because I think most Americans feel a real pressure to be a certain rather bland way, and this goes from the bottom to the top, and when people actually really begin to think about it, that's how they feel. You know, my parents, who are really upper middle class, and they are, they've been involved in politics and live in Washington, and one of them used to be the chief of staff for a Republican senator, and they're really, I would say, pretty establishment people, have both said to me that they no longer feel that they can have any influence on the direction of the country because there's such a pressure to be average. And I don't know how this happened. It's something that's happened gradually over the last 15 years. It certainly wasn't true in 1985.
No.
But it seems to be true now. But the gay movement has made a really big mistake to join in that. You know, we aren't going to get respect for gay people. We aren't going to get true respect for gay people by making ourselves just like little straight people. The true respect is that the country lets everybody do what they want in their private life.
We're talking to Peter Ian Cummings, the publisher of XY Magazine, about his magazine, which is aimed at young gay boys, gay males. And on this topic of politics, how did you find, you know, in England there's this tradition of oppositional parties and all that stuff, you know, huge debate, you know, in the papers and the press, the newspapers there take stands, you know, different papers are known for the left or right or whatever, and yet, you know, in America you just don't see this kind of forum for debate in the press.
Well, it's because the press is owned by all the same companies that, I mean, the press is owned, all the press are owned just by three by AOL Time Warner and Viacom, and there's no debate because all of the press is owned by the same people who give money to elect people to Congress, and the whole establishment is owned by 10 people.
And they have the same
I think
interest.
We all know that there's been a tremendous concentration of media ownership, and the flow of every viewpoint in the country to the center right is complete. It's just complete. There is no more debate.
Mark
Berman wrote about this in his book, The Twilight of American Culture, and he said that there has essentially been an end of history in the country because there's no further debate because there's too much of a concentration of ownership of everything, including the government. Everybody knows that, you know, so it's not like I'm saying that there's anything new, but in England, in other countries, we're the only country where that's true. So,
your opinion of it for the Advocate, was it different than working for the Advocate?
I don't want to say that. I think it was a little bit different, but I left, you know, one of the, well, I won't say that's one of the reasons I left. I mean, I left to start my own magazine, but I just, you know, I mean, it was a different magazine then. It was, I think it would covered a lot more important stuff. But, you know, The Advocate is different now. I like The Advocate a lot. The Advocate is just a news magazine, though. The problem is that there's nobody out there who's standing up for our rights. I forget what we were saying before. You know, when you really start thinking about this stuff, it's very, 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 very complicated because there's a kind of a monstrous system in the country which controls the government, the media, which controls the government and the government, media, and corporations. And I would say that those three institutions are being operated only for the purpose of channeling money from the middle class to the rich and not for the purpose of doing anything. This is something everybody knows. And I don't want to seem like I'm such an extremist about this. This is something everybody knows. Like, what's that book called? Wealth and Democracy. There have been a lot of books written about this in the last year, and everybody knows it's true. I think it, you know, may seem like just a generalization, but if you look at those three institutions, they're being operated for the purpose of channeling money from the middle class to the rich, rather than for the purpose of doing what they're supposed to do. And there's been the largest transfer of money from the middle class to the rich. The middle class are poorer, the rich are richer. And I don't mean the rich like the top 10% of the rich. I mean like the top 0.05% of the rich are massively richer, and everyone else is poorer in real terms. But that's not really a story that's covered by the media too much because they're owned by them.
How do you survive then? At one point you were like, almost didn't know if you would continue publishing, right?
How do we survive is that we keep having increasing sales, and so we make money on newsstand sales.
But do you pay for one issue, for the postings, you pay for the next issue, and then you have to raise, you know, for how, I mean, is more...
We get the money for, you know, we get the money for an issue from the readers, and it's enough to pay for the next one.
It's not that many people...
You're not supposed to be able to do that, by the way.
Right.
Conventional wisdom
says
you can't launch a magazine by having the readers pay for it. But you know what? Conventional wisdom in American magazines is the conventional wisdom of magazines that don't do anything the readers want. Like, people say the magazine market is full, but the magazine market is empty. You know, I had this nightmare. In my nightmare, I woke up and I went in a magazine store, and this is a magazine publisher's nightmare, and I looked down both sides of the newsstands, and every magazine was Redbook. It was a white cover with crocheting on the cover, and it said Redbook and Candy Cane Script, and I woke up in a cold sweat. And I think, you know, there's lots of room for magazines in the country. All you have to do is to have the courage to say anything that's valid.
Is it true?
There's this weird kind of different world in the media that doesn't relate to world, and that goes from the top to the bottom. And it's especially true in the more popular media. You look at MTV, which is supposed to be, you know, representing real people. They even have a program called The Real World. And everybody there is, you know, in Daytona Beach on their spring break going, "Whoa, I'm groping girls," and got Britney Spears with her, you know, little mini skirt and talking about how she's a virgin or she's not a virgin or whatever. These aren't real kids with their real lives. They're just some kind of fakery. And it's all only just made for the purpose of channeling money into the multinational entertainment conglomerates for their kind of second-rate trash-ass music that really is not as good as it has been in the 80s or 70s or 60s or 50s.
Is it true that most of your readers mainly buy it from the newsstands, or what percentage subscribe?
The majority of our sales are newsstands. About 80%. But you know, a lot of our readers aren't in a position to receive it at home.
Right, for sure.
Yeah. Well, it seems like this is so controversial, you know, like, I mean, I say things that probably sound very extreme, except that it's hard to be reasonable in this country right now about the political and social system without sounding extreme. And sorry, I got a little bit cold.
Everything's merged towards the center now, kind of homogenized.
Right. Yeah. I would say that, like I said, I feel that every institution in the country has been co-opted for the purpose of channeling money from the middle class to the ultra-rich. And almost every single thing that you can see is for that purpose. Our magazine, the reason why Out Magazine has the ads that it does and the financial structure that it does and doesn't talk about anything that it's supposed to is because its function is to carry advertising for upscale products so that middle-class gays can spend money on them to transfer money to the ultra-wealthy. And if you anything, just choose anything you like, and it'll be a part of that system. We're not a part of that system, and that's why we don't have any ads.
I think
if you look at gay teenagers as a group, they're a really smart group of people. This generation is coming up right now, really knows what's going on, and it's virtually impossible to find any of them who disagree with the things that we're saying. And I think that makes me feel a lot of hope for the future.
But don't you think they'll get co-opted if they go to, you know, gay campus groups that get homogenized by the Human Rights Campaign? They'll join as advocates for Human Rights Campaign, and then don't you think there's a danger in that?
I think that there's a danger in it. But you know, I'm going to try and put the facts in front of them. You know, gay campus groups are very interesting because I noticed that in England they call gay campus groups the lesbian and gay group, but here they always had to be called a gay straight alliance. I don't understand why that is. The purpose of a gay group is for gay people to insist that they get their rights and for them to meet each other and to have a safe social space for meeting each other. The purpose of it isn't so that we can get along with straight people, and the purpose of it isn't so that for any of that. So I think that's so oppressive. Like, can you imagine if we had the National Association for the Advancement of Colored and White People or the National Association for Women and Men? I mean, it's so oppressive. It's like we can't even have a political or social organization for ourselves in a school without like completely diluting its purpose.
Although the NWA Supreme and now both, I think, admit women and non-blacks, right?
Sure, they admit that. But the purpose of a gay group or a women's group or a black group is to advance the rights of is just two purposes: to advance the rights of the group and to provide a safe space for meeting.
Mm-hmm.
To put it in your name, it's like I don't think it's right, because it's not, you know, I don't believe that this is about asking for our rights. I believe it's about insisting that we have our rights, and there isn't a compromise about it.
How many issues do you put out each time? How many copies of each issue?
It's varied between 50,000 and 80,000, and it tends to go up and down a lot because of various problems and you know.
Yeah.
I can go into that. Distributing XY magazine is not the easiest.
You know, I was in Hong Kong and just saw a VCD of a film, a short called "I Don't Know What You Want," and it had your magazine. The boy in the movie had this Chinese boy left it on the bed so that his roommate, basically this kid who had been kicked out of the house and was living with him temporarily, saw the magazine.
Well, you know, it's really interesting that you should bring that up, because you know, you were talking about people who find the magazine controversial. And I just don't want to give people the impression that straight people find XY magazine controversial. They don't. Most people's parents, there are, you know, the magazine's in all kinds of school libraries, it's in university libraries, all kinds of parents buy it for their kids.
That's in school libraries, too?
Oh, yeah, we have lots of magazines in school libraries. And the thing is that that parents and, you know, people like that, they love the magazine. And, you know, the people who tend to be suspicious of the magazine tend to be gay people in their 30s and 40s. because they, a lot of the time, just, you know, it's like they're balancing on the tip of the Transamerica Pyramid in San Francisco, trying to maintain their respectable, you know, I'm a respectable gay person, you know, and I'm not gay with kids, you know. But to abandon gay kids is just terrible, you know. They need to have role models, and they need to have support from us. And it's I think that's something that parents probably understand.
But do you get money from older guys to support your magazine?
Well, we've had some donations, you know. Mm. The vast number of subscribers of the magazine are gay people, 15 to 25, and you know, because they understand what it is. But you know what? There's something else I wanted to bring up, which has to do with this whole business of relationships and sex, because that's really what this is about. When you are a gay kid and you're 15 or 16, what do you want, and why do you want it? You want to have a boyfriend, and you want to have someone to hold, and you know, you want to have some kind of physical connection with someone else. And there's a cheapness to the way that we refer to sexuality in this country, you know. I can't imagine a European saying that it was wrong to hold another person, you know. We have this narrow definition of sex in this country, which says that sex is just that act of insertion. And, you know, even our definitions and our words don't allow us to be affectionate with other people. Like, in England they have this word shag, which which has to do with holding another person and, you know, be holding another person and just being nice to them. A 15-year-old, 16-year-old wants to be in love and wants to be close to someone else, just like anybody else. And a gay 15- or 16-year-old needs that even more than other people, because they've been told their whole life that they're bad and evil and all that, and they particularly need someone to be close to. And I'm only standing up for the right of people to do that, and I don't feel it should be a felony. If there's one thing that we stand for, it's that. And people out there saying that, you know, I'm encouraging, I don't even know what. But this is not an abomination. The abomination is to say that people should be isolated and not close to other people, and, you know, everyone needs affection. And I don't accept that 16 and 17-year-olds aren't old enough to do that, you know.
Do you get a lot of letters from inmates then? Who are in jail some of them are there for relationship reasons.
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, I have, you know, someone right now who's just been in jail for the last 7 years, because when he was 19 he had a boyfriend who was 17 and his parents had him prosecuted. And he was in the Marines, and, you know, now he's been in jail. I have to register as a sex offender, and there are thousands and thousands of people like this all over the country, and I would say both gay and straight, but these laws are particularly enforced against gay people because the prosecution has to be brought by the parents. It's just terrible. Someone has to people will say, oh, why are you standing up for that? And my reason is because someone has to stand up for it. And it's just terrible. I mean, what we're going to do is just arrest random people, because this is something the majority of people do. And for all those people out there who are saying, oh, you're so terrible, I just want to ask them, you know, did they have a boyfriend when they were 17? Did they have a girlfriend when they were 17? Did they kiss them? And if so, do they think they should be in jail? You know, Americans are strange in that they don't relate the public legal system to themselves personally. You know, I know so many people. I've even been out I talk to a lot of gay people who are sort of 18 and 19, and they'll say, oh, I think the age of consent should stay 18 because gay teenagers need to be protected. Someone said this to me who was 19, and I said, you know, hey, have you ever slept with someone who was 17? And he said, yes. But this isn't about, this is about protecting blah, 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 blah. People don't want to relate their private experience to the public political system. But, And we Americans seem to be unique in that. I mean, I don't think that Europeans don't relate their private experience to the political system. But for us, it's not American, because that's the only reason that this country is here. I find it very strange. it's funny. It's almost like we kind of stopped being America, in the sense that we can't talk about the real issue. and we can't take political action on the rail issue. And in fact, the only person in the whole country who's saying anything about the age of consent is myself, other than real kind of extreme organizations. Like, I mean, there are other people who say things about it, like the North American Manboy Love Station thing. I'm the only person in the mainstream media who even talks about this issue whatsoever, ever.
Well, the
yeah,
guy,
there are
the
thousands of innocent
guy,
people going to jail.
What is the guy
no, that, they do that, but there are some relatable case of that. I mean, who's this type of thing? 15 or 16 are old enough to decide what to do. Well, plus there's this other thing, which is that there's this whole concept that sex in and of itself is evil, which I think that people in Europe and in Canada don't feel is... Americans seem to have this whole idea that sex in and of itself is evil and a violation and something strange rather than something that's beautiful and that and where two people relate to each other in a nice way. There's nice relating to other people, and there's mean relating to other people. But I think that 16 and 17-year-olds are old enough to decide what to do. And I just don't think... I think anybody who wants to hold another person, anybody who wants to kiss another person, is old enough to decide to do that. And, you know, I mean, I can accept that someone who's 8 isn't old enough to decide to do that, but someone who's 16 or 17 clearly is old enough to do that. And I...
So don't you think it is possible for like, a Catholic teen to fall in love with a priest?
I certainly do. And also, I think that a 16-year-old, if they want to fall in love with a Catholic priest, should be allowed to do that. There are two sides to that question. One of them has to do with the vow of celibacy that Catholics priests take, and I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about that, and I don't think that anyone should ever have to take a vow of celibacy. But that's a separate thing. It'd be better priests if they didn't have to do that. And I think there are lots of other religions that have realized that, but that's not my subject. The question is whether someone who's 16 should be able to have sex with their priest, and I think that they should, in fact. But one of my problems has to do with the way that this has been portrayed in the media, because they just seem to report that a priest had sex with a minor, and they never report whether the minor was 17 or whether they were. And, you know, that seems to me to be an interesting subject. I mean, it's like there's a crime called murder, and then there's a crime called munching on potato chips, and it's as if they were reporting that someone was arrested for doing a crime that began with M. So when I see the stories, I don't know anything. I mean, was the priest 20 and was the minor 17? Which seems to me to be quite likely to have been a lot of the cases. I mean, you know, these things aren't that simple.
Especially if they're digging back 50 years to something that happened 50 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I, like anybody else, feel that that if an adult in a position of authority has sex with a, you know, someone who's 9 or something like that, that I don't think it's right. I'm not sure the penalties or the way we deal with it is right, but I don't feel that it's my job to rewrite the sexual offenses laws. And also, we have laws for, you know, rape and statutory rape and all these things. My specific problem has to do with people who are old enough to consent with their, you know, lovers who are, you know, who are adults ending up ill and having their lives ruined. And people don't want to talk about it, but it actually ruins thousands and thousands and thousands of good, innocent people's lives every year.
Right, definitely. How many libraries is the magazine in, you think?
I don't know, because I don't look at our subscription list, but I just say lots and lots and lots. I mean, we have lots of them. We're listed in library catalogs. We've had really good reviews from the librarians, associations, and stuff. Plus, we published a guide called the Survival Guide, XY Survival Guide, 2 years ago, a lot of which was about suicide, because gay teenagers commit suicide at 7 times the national rate, which isn't particularly surprising. And the rate goes up all the time also, because more people are coming out at younger ages, which means that more people are being abused and put down by their schools and parents and friends at younger ages. So the gay teen suicide rate is rising. And we always have a lot of articles about suicide prevention. And so I think at one point, our survival guide was the number one selling gay book last year. And so it made its way into a lot of libraries.
You people have this image that you're probably meeting, getting a lot of dates. It's probably one of the people that write to you. Do you think that's true? That's just a myth?
That may be a different question. I don't think so. you know, Well, I mean, it's you know, obviously it's hard when you're the editor of a magazine because a lot of people are scared of you. I think people treat me in a strange way because I'm a nationally known figure. But as aside from that, I seem to get more dates when I'm in Europe because because my philosophy is the same as theirs. I mean, I've written a lot of editorials, for example, saying that people here are too sexually repressed, and then people out in the public seem to think I'm kind of slutty, which I wish I was, but I'm really not.
Do you think the fact that a lot of people want relationships now, they're looking for kind of permanent relationships, that kind of makes it harder for...
Are they?
You think they are or not?
I think they say they are.
Yeah.
I think this whole thing. I think that you... Gay people have said... I mean, people say that people 10 or 20 years ago had sex, you know, were a lot more promiscuous, and now people want relationships.
Mm.
I'm not sure that's what all gay people really want, is a traditionally defined relationship, but I think they feel like they have to say it because otherwise they won't be respected. And there's this tremendous social pressure in the U.S., and not just among gay people, but among everybody, not to have sex and not to enjoy having sex. And, you know, we're way past the days of Dr. Ruth when she said that people should enjoy having sex. We're just way past that as a country, and people don't think that anybody should have sex. And, you know, I believe that relationships can be all different ways. You know, you can love people in different ways. You can love people for a while. You can love people for your whole life. You can love two different people for your whole life. You can have friends and sleep with them sometimes, and you love them. And these things are all valid ways of relating to other people. And the important thing doesn't have to do with frequency. The important thing is that if you make a commitment, that you keep it, and that you're nice to all the people that you know, and you're nice to all the people that you're with. And this seems to be heresy, because the only accepted relationship in the U.S. is a monogamous commitment for the rest of one's life, which is fine to do. But I'm just saying some people don't want to do it, but everyone feels pressured to say that they do want to do it. I'm not sure that that's what the majority of gay people want to do. There seems to be a pattern with gay men to be in serial monogamy, where people have a boyfriend for a couple years and then they have another one for a couple years, and it seems to make people happy. It always did, and I mean, I don't think that we have to be like straight people. We only have to be happy for each other. And I'm not saying that I'm against... People say to me, oh, you're against monogamy, and you're saying that people should go out and be mean to each other and you know, screw each other in the street. And I never said that. I just said that people should do what makes them happy. And if two people are together and they do something that makes them happy, we shouldn't judge it.
I was just on a panel on public sex, actually, at this Asian Sexualities Conference at Cal State Northridge over the weekend. And you know, that seems to be kind of still on the sexual fringe at this point. You know, the gay community kind of doesn't want to deal with it.
Well, I mean, it's not even about public sex. I mean, public sex is just it's an interesting taboo, and it goes right to the essence of the way we define our society. And you know, I was only just talking about what two people want to do in their private lives.
Yeah.
We shouldn't judge. I mean, everyone in this country, gay people in this country, have started to, and especially in California. You know, California has the image of being the most liberal state, but in fact, it's sexually the most conservative. And I think that most gay people in other parts of the country know that. But you've got
I think so.
But you've got the whole state. I know this isn't true in New York City, and I haven't done a survey of Mississippi, but I suspect it's not true there. It wasn't true when I went to Kansas. But you've got gay people here who run around, and just every time that they hear someone had sex, everyone else calls them a slut, and they become an outcast, untouchable. And just by sleeping with someone once or twice. And I don't understand how anybody forms a relationship if they're not allowed to have sex. I just think it's really strange. You could go the entire length and breadth of the United Kingdom and not find one single gay person who would call everyone else a slut just because they had sex. And in fact, I told my friends in England when I was there 3 weeks ago about my experience in California of everybody going around calling everybody else a slut because they had sex. And they didn't believe me. I mean, they still don't believe me. I tried to convince them for hours, and they didn't believe me because it really is so preposterous.
We're coming to the end of our show. I want to play you this clip, and you may know this singer. So you can play you a little bit, and then you can...
Am I supposed to make a comment at the end?
Yeah, you could.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you recognize the group?
This This song is dedicated to the World Health Organization. It's a medical song, and it concerns a disease whose classification, according to the International Classification of Diseases, is 302.0.
Did you meet Tom Robinson?
I never met Tom Robinson.
British police are the best in the world. I don't believe one of these stories I've heard about them raiding our pubs for no reason at all. Lining the customers up by the wall. Picking out people, knocking them down. Resisting arrest as they're kicked on the ground. Searching their houses, calling them queer. I don't believe that sort of thing happens here. Say if you're glad to be gay, say if you're happy that way. Hey, say if you're glad to be gay, say if you're happy that way.
Well, you know what's interesting about that song is that it was written in the 70s, at which time it was much worse to be gay in Britain than it was here. And since that time, we've traded places with them. I just, they have a right to immigration based on a gay relationship, and they lowered the age of consent last year.
Yeah.
You know, they have all kinds of rights. They have gay, openly gay members of Parliament. And I know a lot of people out there are going to be sitting around saying, oh, that Cummings, he's just an extremist when he says that California is a bad place to be gay. But the fact is that it is one of the worst places to be gay from kind of the point of view of one's psyche, because you don't feel good about being gay here, and you do in a lot of other places. And I think, you know, everyone will say I'm an extremist, but if we don't address that the problem is serious, we can't fix it.
Well, part, I guess we have to go at the end of our hour. You can look up XY at XY.com, and we're debuting a new website.
That's right. It's 3 days.
3 days?
3 days from now.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Peter.
Thanks. Yep.
This was a talk with Peter Ian Cummings, the editor of the publisher of XY Magazine at xy.com, a new website coming up. And you can go to the Subversity webpage and look for links also there at the go.fast.2/SV. This is Dan Zhang signing off for Subversity. This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.